To call a man transparent is to attack his soul, his very being. It can be received as the ultimate insult. Unless, that is, the man in question is actually, literally see-through. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Shanklin and his olive-skin friend Dave.
It's a shambles, isn't it?
It comes across on me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our weekly episode of Flats and Shanks podcast, episode 5. Fumph. Sank. I am
Faith.
Tom Shanklin.
Faith. Dutch, I think. I'm David Flatman.
We are here at Gloucester Services. Actually, I've never been here before. I am going to go inside, but it looks like something from the Teletubbies, for those of you who haven't been here.
Mm.
Like a eco-friendly service station.
Mm, nice. It's the best services, I'm going to say, I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, what have they got inside?
Well, they got organic sausage rolls. They got Farm Shop. Great full English. Actually really good coffee. It's really clean. It's really pretty. It's really nicely laid out. It's actually, everything's really high quality. It's extortionately expensive, but you don't mind because you feel reassured by it.
Sold. Well done.
They got them northbound and southbound now as well.
We haven't got a guest. 67 times capped, is that right?
Correct.
For Wales. First got capped 2003.
Shanks, have you not done your research?
No, not at all. Not, mate.
Shanks, you played with me in all these games.
I mean, I've had a terror weekend. I just really hung over today. So we'll try and skip through this as best we can. Played for the Ospreys. Now he is forwards coach in Bristol. Probably the greatest name ever, John Thomas. Welcome.
Skips, how are you?
Yeah, Tom. Very good. Nice to see you, Skipper.
Why Skips?
He was always like, Tom was always the emotional skipper of the team for Wales.
Was he?
Like, as in entertainment's skipper.
Oh, right, so, yeah. Like, yeah. Okay.
So, always like led the music, led the entertainment's, nights out, all of that.
He wasn't actually inspirational to the team?
Like, in off the field, yeah.
Yeah, but not during the important bits, training or games. No, just off the field.
John's role, JT's role in Welsh camp for 10 years was laundry. The worst one ever.
Yeah. So, well, I was 20 and me and Dwayne Peel as the youngsters were like, you get the worst job, laundry committee. But we didn't seem to get rid of it.
No.
We were there for about 6 years
every
on it.
Every committee.
Were you? Yeah, it was
every
a killer.
Every committee.
What did you have to do? You had to literally wash everyone's kit?
Yeah.
Or make sure everyone's kit came back?
Facilitate. Like,
but you came really good friends with Dave, didn't you? The guy used to come and pick up the laundry in a van.
Did you?
Yeah.
Moved in together in the end.
They're on a WhatsApp group still. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Yeah, good. It's an honour to be on your show, boys.
It's pretty... I know you're probably expecting something low rent, but it is pretty high tech, isn't it? You know, Shanks sometimes comes in his second car so he doesn't show off, but because he was meeting you today and you got loads of caps, he's brought his Range Rover. And I brought it up as soon as I got here and he said, I was thinking about not bringing it in case people get the wrong idea. But here we are and it's brand new Range Rover, what a mate. And he's got some new kit. Look, he's got some new kit. We've got a new little
That's
podcast
impressive.
Recorder.
Hopefully this will improve the sound. You know, Flats is saying I'm coming in my car. He's coming in his third car. He's got three cars.
Yeah.
That one. Doesn't know what to do with it. He's trying to sell it, but at the moment he just keeps the dogs in it. Just takes the dogs out. You know, he's got a car for the dogs.
Anyway.
How the other half
mate,
live.
It's a great setup.
Yeah,
it's
thank
great,
you.
It's I'm selling it this week. Thank you very much.
Someone from listening to the podcast.
Well, I mentioned it on the pod a couple of months ago, and then I took it away in the summer, so I couldn't sell it over the summer. I had a little dent in it that I got taken out. This bloke, I think, from listens to the pod, is going to come and buy it. And it's actually... I won't bother. Yeah. The numbers are crude, but I'm giving it to him at a really good deal. He's had it checked out by mates of his that are car dealers and know the market. So he's getting a good deal. I guess
he signed the door. Have a look. He signed the door with a Sharpie. Anyone wants to buy a Maxi Cozy seat base for the car? I'm selling one of them as well. bought the wrong
and
one,
I've
didn't
got
I?
Some old, I remember Matt Perry, the fullback. He did a testimonial year, and one of his tradition, everyone's got, like, the clubs have all got traditions, but in Bath, if you're going to do a testimonial, you have a curry night in the big, there's an Eastern Eye curry house in Bath, and you have a little raffle and that sort of stuff, and you don't really make any money, you give the charities a few hundred quid or whatever it is, so it's nice. And it's one of those dinners that doesn't cost 200 quid a head or something, 100 quid a head, so people can actually come. Like, remember going to one with Matt Perry, and he was selling, it was like signed Lions jersey from one of his Lions trips, and it's like England jersey, most captain, the fullback of all time at that point. Then it was like Bath jersey, like 250 games for Bath, like, wow. Then it's like training socks. What are they? They're just red socks. They're not even a brand. Then it was like it was like shorts from what year? Don't know. Unbranded, just black shorts, pair of black shorts and a pair of red socks, £3 each. Jeez, mate.
You met Matt Perry?
I haven't, no.
Great lad. Great on the social, but just has this mole growing on his nose. It's just getting bigger and bigger. Needs to get it cut off, doesn't he?
He needs to go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off.
Yeah. You just start staring at it and you're thinking, yeah, I haven't, that is massive. Mate.
I haven't actually noticed that.
I pick up everything.
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
But also, Pez used to cut his own hair, which is fine, except how he used to do it was to hold a disposable razor between his thumb and forefinger and just run it lightly across the top of his head and around the sides. Just drag it across because it would give it a trim.
Wow.
Good chat.
What do you two do?
I would do that. It looked like he'd done it with a knife and fork, to be honest with you. It was real bad, JT.
I use clippers, mate.
Do you?
Yeah, just give it a nice... Yeah. Probably every 2 or 3 days. Charge myself £5 a pop. Cut me on air. Second income. You do the math. How about you?
I don't do mine often enough because when it grows out even a tiny bit, I look like a geography teacher, but I'm lazy. So I do it once.
Yes,
probably
it does.
I should do it once every 2 or 3 days. I do it once every 10 days because I'm not as vain as you.
What's your hair looking like? You've got a beanie on at the moment.
Oh, I had a trim.
Oh, it's actually all right. You've still got a full head of hair.
Yeah,
you got a biscuit
in
the back.
I've got the old. I'm reseeding a bit. Yeah,
golden arches.
It'd be nice to get a little top up there, but can't afford that.
How's life though?
As long as you're on Twitter, you get it free apparently.
how's life in Bristol,
mate? It's good. It's good. Obviously, really enjoy coaching
because you've been promoted, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess so. No, it's been.
Don't be humble, mate. Yeah, you have.
I think just firstly being back in the Premiership's class because. I love the league. Like, obviously played in the Pro 12 for 10 years, but
yeah.
Since I've been a part of the Premier, I know there's always debate, isn't there, how good
yeah.
the Premier. I just think it's an unbelievable league to be a part of. And
it's hard, isn't it?
It's a brutal yeah. league. Every game, you've got great crowd. It's always a big occasion and it's brutal every week. Like, and I think, we've got some good players like Stephen Luatua and that, but they get battered after each game, you know. It's such a physical league, and but it's one that just really grateful to be a part of. I love it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one down at Bristol, isn't it? Because you're kind of being sort of crude about it. You get relegated, but then you spend a load of money. It's a club that spends a lot of money. You got some really high profile players. So actually, what often happens is, as a newly promoted club, it's kind of like no one expects you to do that well and the pressure's off. But that isn't quite the case for you guys, is it? Because you've actually got some big names, you know, and you've got Charles Pietau still to come back, but you've signed some big players there and spent a lot of dough on some top quality merchandise, top quality kit. So you kind of got to start winning. You're already winning games, but you've got to kind of start quick, right?
I think there's a reality that, obviously you have to have that little bit of X factor, don't you? And I think... But what I'd say is on that point, Flats, is every team's got that.
Yeah.
That, so there is pressure on us to win games, but there's pressure on every team. And I think that's perhaps where teams over the last 5 years, 5 or 6 years that have been promoted have struggled. Like, it's probably not too much wrong with, like, you know, look at London Irish last year. Probably not too much wrong with the coaching. But there's, you know, unless you've got some X factor and some collision in your game, then you're going to struggle. But I think the other thing to it as well is, like, obviously we have got some good players. But we probably don't have the same depth as other teams. But it's like, I think the key thing is, it doesn't matter if you've got good players, you still, it's about, you know, as a former forward, it's about building connections and combinations and having time in the saddle. And we're relatively young as a group, like as a coaching team and as a wider squad. So I think it's like, it was good for us last year to be in the Championship and go through that experience. But again, high turnover of players. I think there's been 35 new players in the last 2 years, which is...
Wow.
So I think it's obviously trying to balance. Obviously, there's an expectation with us and with every team, but also there's a reality that we need to perform. But I think that's where Pat's been very good. Pat's very good at getting people on the same page as a leader. And I think, you know, the teams that we would have played in where you've had success, it's you get clear direction from the top. And people have to get in line with that. And as long as you've got a clear vision and people, like as a player, I always knew if the coach told me what he wants I can go and do my job. I think sometimes it's difficult when you don't know exactly what your job is.
Especially as a forward, you love that.
Tell me what you want me to do and I'll go and do it. And I think that's where Pat's very good. And
have you seen Pat lose it yet?
No, he's pretty good, to really? Be fair. Yeah, he's all right, mate. Yeah, he's.
Have you lost it yet?
Oh, mate, I can be a little bit up and down.
You got a bit of rage in there, have you?
nothing too bad, but...
Hardly hit any of the players.
I think, it's just like, even when I was a player, I always just think it's important to be quite direct with people. So, like, if someone's not doing their job, like, I think it's important to tell them and not beat around the bush. Like, I never liked coaches too much that tried the old reverse psychology and, like, would try and say, oh, how do you think you're doing and all that. I just, tell me what I need to improve. So I just try and be that way with the players and just say, this is where we need to improve. But at the same time, we've got, as you mentioned before, we've got some real experience like George Smith and Stephen Lutua and John Afoa and Jordan Crane and guys like that who have been in good environments. So it's like they also drive things as well. You know, it's not all just on.
How do you keep sort of the yourself and the coaching staff and all the players motivated when you were demoted last year? Was it tough?
Mate, it's like it is tough. Obviously, it won't beat around the bush. And I think, I experienced it with Worcester as well on the other side, where I was part of the playoff final where you got back promoted. And it's like, I know there's like the big debate about whether you should get rid of relegation, and I know there's two sides to the argument, but you can't, like, it's unbelievable drama, isn't it? Around the league, whether it be, I know the playoff's gone now, but those two games with Worcester, Bristol a few years ago, and then obviously. There's a lot at stake, but it is tough. It is too tough, and obviously a lot of people lose their jobs. A lot of players left, but I think then it's again. Well, that's where Pat's been good. He's come in, clear vision, and you know, we're all trying to buy into something.
So when you, having been relegated, you think, am I right? I'm not putting words in your mouth. Having been part of a relegated club, do you think they cannot scrap relegation? You think they've got to keep it? Because it gives drama, do you mean? Or do you feel like actually it's not fair? Or
I think this, I'm probably going to, I don't want to sit on the fence, but I probably will, because...
Yeah, but I find this really difficult.
It's difficult because a big thing with sport is drama, isn't it? And entertainment. Yeah. Mm. And you can't, like, the league is the league because of the, you don't get any dead rubbers because of the nature of the league. You know, you never get a dead rubber because of, you know, even when 12th are playing 10th or whatever. But on the flip side, like, I just think, like, as, again, being part of the promotion there with Worcester and the playoff system, it's unbelievable theatre and drama, and, like, it's great for TV and all that.
Yeah.
But it's probably not great for the development of the sport, like, in terms of, like, and we obviously, being part of the Ospreys there for 10 years, young players do come through in Welsh regions, in Irish provinces, because they're allowed the opportunity, they're allowed those games, down weeks where they can come in. Whereas because there's so much more pressure in the Premiership, perhaps the younger players don't get the same opportunity. So, it's a difficult one. Like, I'm sure all the board members of all the clubs would want it scrapped.
Yeah,
you know, for obvious reasons, to ring fence it. But
it's difficult, isn't it? Because
depends which side of the fence you sit on.
The thing is, it is about drama. It's also about, you know, protecting the game, in that we want these people who finance the clubs to stick around because it's viable, and their money's, you know, they might not get relegated. But then it's the whole thing, that everything you say is brilliant about the Premiership. So big crowds every week,
exactly,
loads of competition, that literally dies. And the whole notion that, yeah, but, you know, let's, Dylan Hartley and Courtney Laws, they're warriors, they're going to want to play every week. Yeah, but are you then saying Sean O'Brien and Johnny Sexton aren't warriors? Of course they are. Yeah. They just get to rest and get taken better care of. So they get, and it literally doesn't matter as much if they lose. There is literally less at stake. So it is.
You could potentially ring fence it for 3 or 4 years. Possibly.
Yeah, but then, you know, it would be an interesting experiment. But then it's like the things that make I think the one thing that makes the Premiership excellent, its number one asset, is how relentlessly difficult it is. So when you are winning games, it is properly hard earned now, and it's always, what that means is that means it transcends just playing. It means that fans know they can wander up with their ticket they paid a lot of money for, and they know they're going to see the players they want to see. Largely, I mean, look what happens when Bath change a load of guys or Bristol change a load of guys, everyone goes mad about it. And that's once. And that's just because it's a long season. Mm. Imagine that happening two in every 4 weeks or two in every 5 weeks. Actually, what happens is it devalues it completely. So I think it is brutal. And everyone says, well, it's not sustainable as it is. We've got to ring fence it because it's not financially sustainable. Well, Premier League football's not financially sustainable then. Lots of pro sport isn't because they're losing money. But actually, what we are talking, the game has been pro. The clubs are not without owners. There aren't many owners walking out and leaving people in the lurch, actually, as though people, you know, so actually, are these people willing to continue to lose a couple of million quid? It seems they are. So it's kind of like that actually kind of makes it sustainable because they are willing to lose it. I mean, you know, if you're worth 750 million, losing 2 million is a kick in the nuts. But frankly, it's like us losing 200 quid, lads. Mm. It, you know, it is bearable. And if you love it, you stay. So it's an interesting
I do think, like, 100
quid for you, France.
And I think, like, going back to the point you made earlier about, like, the expectation on Bristol. But there's also, like, the other side is obviously developing young English talent as well. Mm. And I think there's good young players we have in the club, and same with all the teams. And I just think, like, if you did scrap it, that would be the one thing where there's the potential. And I guess it's, what is the bigger picture? Is the bigger picture a successful England team?
Yeah.
Or is it, and that's probably, again, going back to the debate with football, is probably English football has been compromised, isn't it, by the success of the Premier League?
Yeah.
Maybe over the last 20 years with all the foreign imports and the expectation on the teams and that. You wouldn't want that to happen, and so it's getting the balance right, isn't it, between keeping the spectacle that is the Premiership at the moment, but then also developing the and protecting players and developing young English talent.
There's also
go on.
There's also, I mean, the Premiership Cup is basically designed for these young players, so that's their window. But then, how much are international coaches watching? Other coaches watching? Hopefully, a lot. But also, there might be a tweak to the system where. I know that clubs are financially incentivised to pick their own academy players, develop their own academy players, give them first team contracts, and the first portion of their contract's covered, and you get credits, that sort of stuff. I wonder if you quite aggressively increase the financial incentives for clubs to play locally sourced sausages. We're at Gloucester Services. Locally sourced meat. I guess that would make a difference. And one thing the Premier League football's never been able to establish is. There's got to be an English player in every Premier League team starting 11. I mean, it was suggested in a newspaper column years ago and everyone went bloody mad. One player in each team. No way. Chelsea will... No way. Absolutely no way we're having an English player. You have to have one in the team, you know. Yeah. So actually, we have two players who aren't European qualified in every match, 23. Yeah. I reckon that's all right. I know that South Africans don't count and you can have Scottish and Irish. The Irish don't leave because of tax reasons very often. And I know you've got to pay them a lot to get them over. And everyone knows that. But it's an interesting one, but I kind of think there are still... I feel like what's at stake every weekend is what makes the Premiership what it is. So it's really hard to argue against losing that.
We have this perception of Bristol that they want to throw the ball around, run it from everywhere, but we are having a little chat off air. He's a little bit nervous about what we're going to ask him. but it's not the case, really, is it? You know, you work incredibly hard, and you have done, on your scrum and your set piece.
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing on the way we play is, and Pat's pretty clear about this, is he just wants players to play with expression. Now, he doesn't go out and tell them to go and run the ball from their goal line and this and that, which Pat just wants to play like a what's on mentality. So if there's a lot of numbers in the front line, then we should probably kick it.
Yeah.
You know, if there's space, then... But I think the key thing is making good decisions and allowing the players to make good decisions. But having the freedom and the expression to do it. And I think sometimes the danger is if you do it the other way, where you go, we're just going to have a really good defence and a good kick chase, but you can chuck it about if you want to.
Yeah.
But I think, so we invest a huge amount of time in our skills. A bit like, you know, we did when we, as young players with Wales, you know, with the Steve Hansen regime.
Scott Johnson, yeah.
Well, we invest a huge amount of time in our skills and upskilling the players, because you have to have good skill level to play that type of game. But then the key thing is in the Premiership is obviously you have to have a good set piece. And I think, like, last year in the Championship, we probably, our set piece wasn't what it should have been. Like, we played against some teams who were pretty well drilled down in the Championship. And so I think we invest, like, we speak about the set piece, it's obviously the heart of our game. And we know that to be able to play the game we want to play, we have to be able to defend walls on our goal line. And we've actually, so you know, myself and Mark Irish, who's the scrum coach, we've had a little bit.
Where's he from?
He's Bristol. He played for Bristol for a long time.
Yeah, from Ireland.
He's not Irish, no. But we've just had a bit of fun with the players with it as well. We've set some goals for them in pre-season around, like, we've got the Pigsty Challenge. So Ollie Cohn. So obviously it's a favourite haunt of a lot of the players in Bristol. They go to the Pigsty. So we just said, right, if we can not concede any maul tries in the first six games, me and Iro, the scrum coach, we'll take them for a free feed in and mate, it's amazing how when you bring things to life, it, like, you know, when you put an incentive in front of a group.
Yeah.
So I haven't got the exact stat, but we've probably had to defend about 16 goal line mauls in the first five games, and we haven't conceded. Right?
Awesome.
And
one
it's
week
like
to go.
After the game, the boys like, "Yeah, the Pigsty Challenge is still rolling." It's still rolling.
Are you
know,
to score now, so you don't have to pay.
Yeah,
but then we've got fines with it as well. Like, so you talk about like the emotional investment in the set piece and stuff, and like one of the things that Iro is big on is that all forwards should wear eight studs.
Yeah,
because it's like
good on you, Iro. Good luck.
A lot of the pitches these days are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
And a lot of players, the perception, I can wear mouldies. Like,
you can't.
I'm not saying like, but the backs or the back rows, whatever. But,
because they're more comfortable boot for backs. That's one of the reasons why.
It's more comfort, yeah. But I think, like, when it comes to scrummaging or defending a maul, like, you often see it where a scrum's maybe under the pump and then a back row, a seven or a six, is slipping. And that should never happen, should it?
Yeah,
you know,
no,
and how frustration is like conceding a scrum penalty because your sevens were in mouldies or something. So one of the things that we said, right, everyone's got to wear eight studs, and for every stud that you don't wear under eight, it's £50 a stud.
Brilliant.
So George, what where it's been? It's actually been quite funny because
George Smith, grand in the pot each week.
George Smith's 110 caps, right? He's never worn eight studs in his whole life, and he's like, "Fellas, do I really have to wear eight studs?" And we're like, "Yep, you got to wear eight studs."
Is he doing it?
And so he wears Nike boots. I'm not sure whether Nike do the eight studs or whatever, but so he didn't wear them for the first three games. So he's had £300 into the kitty, right? And he's looking at us like going, "Fellas, you're killing me." Like, same with one or two of the other back rowers. So they've put money into the kitty. But Jordan Crane's got this guy who, he can change the soles of it. So whatever your favourite boot is, like say you've got a particular boot, which is a nice comfy boot, he can change the sole of it, you know. So you can
put extra studs in.
He can put the eight studs in. So to be fair though, George never worn eight studs in 110 caps or whatever. And he's going, right, I can't keep paying.
It's cost £100 a week.
I can't pay £100 a week. So he sent his boots off to this guy. And unfortunately, the guy's had a heart attack.
Oh no.
Right, so yeah, it's brutal.
It's an expensive heart attack for George.
But George has sent all his boots off, and now he hasn't got boots now. He's paid £300, and now he hasn't got his boots as well. So he's like,
we're not laughing at the heart attack.
No. And I hope he really gets well soon.
Yeah.
For his sake and George's.
For George's sake as well. But it's brutal. So George could be, after round six, like, £600 down. and he's just like, it's become a bit of a running joke. But no, I think just stuff like that, and I know like it is lighthearted, but the guys have bought into it, and I think like to defend 15 or 16 goal line mauls is impressive without
really
conceding,
is.
You know? And there's
especially these days when they're so hard to stop.
There's other incentives around you know, not conceding too many, like being above the average with scrum penalties and things like that. So we brought it to life a bit, and we've had some fun. And me and Ira could be skint after if the players meet the challenges against Worcester next week. Me and Ira are skint for a few months.
But but get well, dye the boot. If that's his name.
Yeah, it's brutal. That's shocking. And he's a great guy.
Now you retired. And it's really topical now, isn't it? The tackle area, the tackle height, concussion. You retired actually with concussion, didn't you? With a head injury. I always remember when you played England and you got knocked out by Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
And Sean, great tackle. Sean Edwards said he deserves that for running too high.
No. So we had a policy. So don't let the truth get
away. Don't ruin it. That's a good story, JT.
But no, so like, remember with Gats in the 15s, you had to carry off nine. In between the 15s, you carry off 10.
Yeah.
And there was a ruck in between the 15s. Yeah. And I, you know, I was like, first 10 minutes, like, keen, give me the ball. And I ran off nine, which should have been off 10.
Yeah.
And Wilco Fear, it was a great shot. No, like, probably would have been a red card in today's game.
Massively. It was right on the jaw, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I, like, to be fair, I was gone. And then we used to, on a Monday then, Gats would do the old, you'd get, yeah, all your profiles would be up on the pin board. And there'd be a little comment underneath. Underneath each beer,
a summary of your game,
and I was like still concussed on the Monday, and the Gats was just on my corner. Was got what you deserve, got what you deserve for running off nine.
Ian Evans, right? Yanto, who's been on the pod, used to just get three words: discipline, discipline, discipline.
Did he?
One of Ian's was, "You're a liability to this team."
Was it really?
Of Sean Edwards.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Oh, but
that is clever. Do you have any good ones, Shanks? Like, your body language is terrible.
No,
most defeated looking bloke in the world.
Remember, like, watch out for Jamie Roberts.
You've probably talked about this on the podcast before, but your 50th cap.
Yeah, we have.
Oh, mate, that was...
We actually
I'll
interviewed
do it again,
Gats.
Though.
No, we interviewed Gats about it, and he's like had uncontrollable laughter. He thinks it's hilarious.
It's one of the funniest things before, because you...
No. What about the time we were out in Argentina?
Hang on, I want JT's version of your 50th cap, if you can remember it.
Yeah, so it was Italy. It was 2008 Grand Slam, wasn't it? And it was... was that the penultimate game, maybe?
No, it was Italy, third game.
Oh, no, it was third game, yeah.
Yeah.
And Gats, like, is a... Like for the perception of it, like, Gats is obviously he's quite a quiet man, isn't he? And he doesn't like
he speaks quite softly.
He speaks softly. I've never seen him lose it with the players.
Apart from when he dropped Ryan Jones as captain.
We'll do that in a minute. We'll do that next.
So his team talks are really short, sharp, and to the point. But like the players massively respond because he's a man of few words. When he does speak, it's pretty powerful. So he walks in and we're in the Vale of Glamorgan. Obviously, he'd do his little talk. We'd all in the circle, in the semicircle, before we go to get on the bus. And
the pattern's a pattern.
Yeah, so Pat, Gats comes in. He's like, fellas, he talked a little bit about the game plan, real short, couple of minutes. And he went, oh, I need to mention it's a special occasion for someone today, Tom Shanklin, 50th cap. And everyone was like, thought he was going to say something really nice about Shanks.
Yeah.
He went, he said, I'm amazed you've got 50 caps. He said, we used to target you when we played Saris, when we were watching Saris, because we thought you were the weak link in the team. But he said, I can't believe you've made it to 50 caps. But to be fair to you, he said, mate, and we were all just like in stitches though, just before getting on the bus.
On the bus, yeah.
And you had a good game that day, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd taken a hammering, mate. I was in the... top five that could do better, wasn't he, in the World Cup, like the ugliest man in the world. It was me, then Serge Betson and some others,
Neil Jenkins,
and every time I try to say something, boys would just start singing UGLY, you ain't got no alibi.
And Shanks gets the red mist as well. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, no, when he goes monkey strong.
Oh mate, he gets so
strong.
Throw
an orange at me
in Australia.
Yeah. You did, JT.
Yeah, so
No, I don't know what. I was banging on his door.
He was trying to get into the room for some reason. And like,
he wasn't drunk, was he?
We were trying to raid the minibar, I think.
So I opened. Someone opened the door. Coops opened the door.
Yeah.
And I threw an orange at Shanks. And where did it hit you?
On my bum.
Yeah. And it was like, we were all giggling. And it really, like, you were broken, weren't you? And then he gets, like, you know when he's lost it? Because he goes beetroot red.
Yeah.
And he goes really silent. Yeah. And then next thing, we're all trying to, like, keep the door shut. And there's, like, four of us holding the door. And Shanks just opens the door.
Yeah,
like, unbelievable strength.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no.
You're screwed.
It was a good tour, that.
Don't mess with Tom
it?
Shanklin when you, he gets the...
He burst with when you beat Matt Lee Cup, wasn't it? Tenerife.
You burst onto the scene of that game, didn't you, New Zealand? I didn't know what hit him. Like a gazelle. How many caps have you had before then?
That was like my sixth cap.
What was your first cap?
It was Australia on the summer tour. Remember we went on a summer tour to Australia and New Zealand before the World Cup.
Yes.
And we played, Australia was the first cap. Yes. Wendell Saylor and that were playing.
Scored a try
and
from his own.
We did quite well and they scored two tries the last 10 minutes. Yeah. And then we played New Zealand the week after. That was my second cap. I was on the bench.
How did that go?
And it was... Dan Carter's first cap at 12.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he was unbelievable. Yeah. He, like, Mark Taylor was a very good international centre, and he made him look old.
Steve Hansen said, right, they've got a new cap. We must target him all game.
A young lad at 12. Yeah.
Scored like 27 points on his own.
Charv got knocked out, and I came on for Charv. Yeah. That was my second cap.
Was it Jerry Collins that knocked out Charv? I remember that hit. That was brutal.
Yeah.
By the way, can we rewind a bit and about when Warren Gatland took the captaincy off Ryan Jones? What happened then?
Oh, that's the only time I've ever seen him lose it. I think it was
Fiji.
We're playing Fiji, which are a bit of a bogey team for Wales. And I think Ryan accidentally gave a penalty away, obviously. Right last minute, didn't he? I think Fiji ended up kicking the points and drawing the match.
Yeah.
And Gatland came in and he was fuming. And he said, I'll tell you one thing now. I'm not doing the accent.
Go on.
I tell you one thing now. You bloody close the freezer for the tip tops. he said, Ryan Jones will not be captain. Matthew Rees will be captain of the side next week. And if you ever seen a man grow taller in his boots and shoes, it was Smiler.
What's this?
He walked out of the changing room about 7 foot, didn't he? He was all slunched over. Like,
get out the door.
He was all slunched over, like, because we lost the game. And he said, Matthew Rees to be captain. God, it's back straight away, wasn't it?
Chest out.
Yeah.
What did Ryan Jones do then? That's how he got it taken off him. He's just sitting there and his head goes between his legs, like, ooh.
Yeah, I think it was just a bit of a reaction, wasn't it? But
what I'd say about Ryan, he handles himself well in those times.
Oh, massively.
It was obviously brutal the way it happened, but Ryan handled himself pretty well.
Yeah. He did. But anyway, getting back to concussion, why did you retire? I mean, I know, flat nose, but...
Well, it's presumably because you said that it's concussion, presumably.
So, basically,
it was really strange, right? Because I'd only had two times in my career where I had to leave the field with what I thought was concussion, but it was basically when you get a knockout.
Yeah.
It was only twice that happened, so I didn't really think I had a massive issue with head injuries or whatever, but you obviously play a lot, and in the back row, forwards or whatever, you get a lot of head knocks in a game, and the mindset of our generation is just dig in. You'd never leave the field.
No.
And you'd often see stars or whatever, and it's just like crack on. And even if after a game you knew you weren't right, you'd play the next week or whatever. Anyway, it was in my time with Worcester. I'd pulled my calf in pre-season, and it was really strange because I was rehabbing from a calf injury. I think similar thing happened to Dean Coles. He had all those head problems coming back from a calf injury. But anyway, I was coming back from a calf injury, and I started getting at the time I didn't know, it was difficult to describe, but it was almost like out of body experiences, and it was like. It's getting like deja vu type things, you know, when you get sometimes when you concuss. But I was fine. I was just rehabbing from my calf, and I was getting I wouldn't say headaches, but just strange feelings. And I was getting
Like when your heart rate went up, or was it just walking around normally?
Yeah, and I just sometimes I'd be driving the car, and I'd have these strange 15-20 second moments where I wasn't sure what was happening. I was still I was conscious. I was still able to drive the car and know what was going on, but. And then I'd get these, and then I'd also get in, because I was captain at Worcester at the time, and I was always I never used to make notes or anything. Yeah. You just speak from the heart or whatever. And I'd be in the middle of a speech, and I'd be you have two or three points to make.
Yeah.
Make the first point, I'd be forgetting what I was going to say on the second or third point. But this was happening over the period of 3 months, and I didn't really say it to anyone, because it's hard when you look back now, it sounds bad, but at the time you don't really know. It's not that obvious what's going on.
Now and people probably know a lot more.
And then to cut a long story short, they sent me to have scans and stuff, and I was diagnosed with epilepsy, which is when I say epilepsy, people think, oh, I must have been having really bad seizures and
foaming from the mouth.
Yeah, but there's obviously many, many different types of epilepsy, and I was basically those experiences that I was having were what's called absent seizures,
right?
Basically, so and
we just disappear,
but you're conscious, but you get 15 seconds where you're a bit vacant, So it's maybe school teachers from the past would probably it all fall into the place when the vacant thing with me, so that was really it came from nowhere, it was such a out of the blue, because at the time I remember one of my mates, V-Man,
yeah.
He was like, I was having a laugh and joke with him a few weeks before, and he was going, oh, how long do you think you got left playing? And I was only 32. And at the time, I'd had a few groin injuries, but at the time I was really feeling really fit.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, mate, I'm going to, because I loved playing. I was like, I'm going to play till I'm 40. And then like 6-8 months later, I was retired.
Yeah.
And it was brutal. And I think what had happened, for obviously he went through a huge amount of, saw a lot of consultants and this and that. And what has happened it, from a particular bang they'd have, it wasn't, some people get repeated concussions.
Yeah.
Mm. Mine was from an impact that had caused a degree of brain injury that had, that was making me have these absent seizures, basically. And then it was weird. I carried on playing because I was...
Jeez, carried on. Yeah, bad, like, bad, isn't it, when you look back?
I was in denial at the time because I loved the game. And I was just like, it was just another challenge to me.
Yeah.
So then the doctor said, oh, you can take medication to control the seizures, but there's no reason why you can't keep playing because there's other players that have played.
Right.
Like, who's the old loosehead? The old Scottish loosehead from years ago. Tom Smith. He played for years and years with epilepsy, and he had it far worse than me. Like, yeah. So when he told me this, I was like, right, happy days, I'll just crack on. So I played for the rest of that.
You don't know any different, do you?
I played for the rest of that season, and that finished up with that playoff final against Bristol.
Yeah.
That was my last game. But then in the off season, I reflected on it, and I was just like, it was such a brutal, it was quite a dark time in my life because, like, you sacrifice everything for the sport. But then I was coming home and I was like, the medication that he'd given me was making me really irritable and stuff. And I was probably like, I'm always really quite a laid back person at home, and I was like different with my family. And then I just got to that summer and I was just like, what am I doing? I've now got three kids. I had two kids at the time. I was sacrificing everything just to play on a weekend. And then I was just like, I've got to be honest with myself here and just like, call it a day. But, mate, it's just like, it's one of those things that happens. Like, it's a contact sport.
Now?
No, I'm fine now. Yeah, I'm all right. Like, the only thing I get
don't
sometimes...
Don't know if I can handle you going mental in the car now.
Mate.
Kicking
trust
off.
Trust Shanks to take it seriously.
It's like the only thing I reckon I've still is that's not the same as I still like my memory recollection.
Yeah,
isn't like the barometer for memory is if you're good on Question of Sport, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like and I used to be class on Question of Sport.
Yeah, gone right. Now.
And now like I'm like oh,
Bomb's
shit.
Good. Bomb was on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Bomb. He's the best.
Yeah, Bell's amazing.
Shanks was terror.
And but now I watch Question of Sport. I'm like oh, I can't remember his name. So that, like, all jokes aside, like, I do get like a little bit of short term memory loss and stuff, but I'm all right. Like since I've finished,
So George Smith gets red carded for a tackle on Jackson Ray, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Did you go with him to the hearing?
No, I didn't. Pat did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he ends up doing a demonstration, doesn't he?
The panel.
Are you all able and to, all hit, wasn't it, or something?
Are you able to tell us sort of what the demonstration was and what he was trying to do, or was it?
Yeah, like I think where George is a class act is like just in the way he plays the game. He every single breakdown or tackle he calculates it and he makes it like so. One of the questions I think we were on this conversation and said how like about his longevity.
Yeah,
and he reckons he's playing the game for so long because he's smart about what breakdowns and tackles he goes into and doesn't go into.
And he has six
so,
studs.
You know, a lot of sevens. A lot of sevens will just throw themselves into every breakdown. But George is actually right. He's really smart about the breakdowns he picks and doesn't pick. And if there's like one where he like thinks there's someone he's going to get smashed, he won't go in.
Yeah.
So it's like he's very very smart bloke around the breakdown, obviously. And then he's gone in and he's articulated himself pretty well in the hearing because I think like the thing with George's tackle was it wasn't obvious that it was to the head. It was impossible to see that because obviously red card forced to the head and it wasn't. So George just went in and just explained like obviously Jackson Ray gets the whiplash effect, but there's so many different factors that make an impact look determine the outcome of an impact. And it's like you know if Jackson Ray's carrying and he's prepared for the tackle with his. You know, your lead foot dominant, and he's prepared. Like he doesn't get because he's not prepared for the tackle. It looks a lot worse
because George Smith has blindsided him.
He's blindsided him. Yeah. So there's all these different circumstances, and also like the thing with George is, as soon as the tackle was made, nobody on the field reacted. as if it was a bad tackle. You know, when it's an obvious high tackle, yeah. Everyone's like arms up in the air.
Mike Brown's run.
No, there was no reaction, right? And all George did when he went into the pad, just explained that like how he was targeting the ball, and it wasn't like a cheap shot, shoulder charge. He'd attempted to wrap his arm, and how in with his different forms of tackle technique, assesses each tackle differently. That tackle, he was targeting the ball, and he was going upward in his thing. Obviously, Jackson Ray wasn't prepared, and then obviously because of his momentum had taken him up, he'd gone up, and then that's what caused the whiplash effect. But I think the point on it was like every situation different, and this is where it's a grey area at the moment, isn't it? Because all that, for me, that's a rugby collision, and you can't say categorically that was to the head. And as it proved then in the it got dismissed, and yeah. he got found not guilty, and then he was able to play the following week. But that's cost us, you know, we've played 30 minutes without George, yeah. there, and we were leading at the time. Now I'm not saying we definitely would have won the game, but like
you'd have more of a chance.
The contest is almost gone there.
But he also bought a nice bottle of red, didn't he, for the panel?
The thing is, you've got, he must have, genuinely now, he must have done a really, really good job, because, and actually, there's something in that. I mean, it's one of those things like David Beckham gets done for speeding, and Mr. Loophole gets him off on a technicality.
Yeah.
This isn't a technicality of process where George is going in with his advisor and saying, by the way,
yeah.
you didn't notify us by email within 72, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm out. He's not saying that. He's saying, oh, yeah, I hit him, and his head did that. But then you get the Will Spencer thing, which is a massive bloke tackling a little bloke, and it's not intentional, but that's not the point. That's not what matters. And you get, correct me if I'm wrong here, JT, you get a letter from Jackson Ray saying, not dobbing in George Smith, he's asked to write his account of it, I guess, and tell the truth. So he's just not lying. And he says, he made contact with my head. And he doesn't get banned. And then you have Tommy Taylor writing a letter. This is all, I've heard this, so tell me if I'm wrong here. You get Tommy Taylor writing a letter saying Will Spencer did not make tackle with my head. Yet Will Spencer gets a 4-week ban and George Smith gets let off. So it's almost like if Will Spencer, he's a hell of a second row, hell of a unit, but maybe not a natural barrister. Maybe if he'd stuck up for himself a bit more and actually thought more about representing himself, he might have got off. I mean,
yeah, potentially.
It's easy to say he shouldn't have been off, or he shouldn't. Actually, they, if you cannot prove, I watched it from all the angles for the highlight show thing.
Knew you would.
And it was like, first of all, I think I might have said this on the pod already, but it was like, right, we're going to do this. We're going to chat about the Sarri's Bristol game now. And Mark Durden-Smith, who I do it with, says, right, I'm going to ask you about the red card. Don't tell me your answer now. But don't make sure you've seen it, because I'm going to ask you about it. And I said, ask me if you want. I am going to completely sit on the fence, because I have not seen an angle yet that proves to me he hit him in the head.
Yeah.
Then I see what I think the TMO called the killer angle from the back, and I watched it. Now, I watch it on an iPhone at the AJ Bell on WhatsApp in portrait, not landscape. So it's all right. It's much better quality. And I'm thinking that he has made contact with his head. Now, the reality is, I'm looking at that 10 times and then talking about it on the telly. There is nothing in it for me. But actually, yeah. if you then have to go and prove, you can prove a car was doing 59 and a 40. There is a line where you just cannot prove that it has made contact with his head. Yeah. And therefore,
no, exactly.
actually,
yeah.
you can't actually begrudge George for getting off that if he's managed to make, you know, substantiate that
just
line.
Just flat as it was. It was Alex Ferguson who got let off because he said he had diarrhoea for speeding.
Really?
Beckham, yeah, it was. How are you coaching now, sort of tackle technique? It's true. How are you coaching tackle technique now? Because obviously it's really topical.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
Don't know how, like, my point is on this, just quickly.
Are you doing that thing where you ask a question and give the answer?
No.
He hates it when people do that.
Not every tackle can you tackle low. It's impossible.
No, you can't. And this is what George was explaining.
So how are you coaching your players now?
Well, you have tools in the toolbox, and then you use the one you need, don't you? And I think as a coach, your job is to, you can't just say, you're right, we're going to tackle one way.
Yeah.
Now, I think if you take a step back, what you're trying to achieve when you defend, you're either trying to get the ball back or trying to slow the ball down.
Yeah.
Now, 10 years ago, probably the main way of trying to get the ball back was the jackal, wasn't it? You go low, chop, and then you got your classic seven or six or whatever that gets the ball back for you. Now, the really interesting thing is, like, the way the game's refereed at the moment is about 75% of referees' penalties go against the defence, right? So, and the with the way that you ruck law and stuff as well, right? So it's one of those things where, like, we coach to like the thing we coach in the tackle is to get the player to ground as quickly as possible, right? So that could be low, like a low chop tackle, or it could be just a higher tackle where you target ball, but we're still trying to get them to ground because we've got guys who can compete over ball. But not every team does that. Like, Saris, for example, they don't massively compete hard over ball. They try to get the ball back or slow ball down through tackling higher and gang tackling, double tackles. And there's you've seen a lot of teams over the years, haven't you, who take that approach. But
yeah.
I think, like, you can't fault teams for having that approach because if 75-80% of the penalties go against the defence...
At the breakdown.
Yeah. So, like,
avoid breakdowns.
Avoid any as many situations where you're going to give penalties away. So, if you're going to get penalised for competing over ball, and like George has been penalised quite a few times far this season, right? But we get the refs report then the following week, and you get red or green. Whether like it's a green is the decision was made and it was the correct decision, and then you get a red if it's the incorrect decision. And a lot of George's come back and it's red.
Really.
Yeah, and it's because it's such a fine, because he's so incredibly quick in what he does. Now, there are times, don't get me wrong, where George has been legal, but there's also a lot of times where he's legal. But because he's in so quick, the refs, I think sometimes, and they do a great job, but they think, how's he got in there so quick?
He must
be offside. Yeah, and then they give a penalty against him. And then, like, in the Gloucester game, like, the actual sin bin he got was because of, he totaled up, like, it was a build-up of penalties. But actually, quite a few of those penalties weren't penalties. They came back as red errors, So I think the point I'm trying to make is, like, if you want people to tackle lower, then the laws have to sort of reflect that, the laws of the game. So at the moment, teams are probably tackling higher, and it's just a perception. Other teams and defence coaches are probably saying, let's tackle higher. Because they don't want to. The reason we tackle low is to get the man to the ground quickly, so you can get.
You're going to get pinged.
So tackle higher, so we can slow the ball down through a double tackle a little bit higher, or a double tackle that causes a collision that makes them drop the ball.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a bit around the laws of the game as well.
That's
so it's
yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So you're actually desperate to defend. But as soon as the ball hits the deck, you are now at a statistical disadvantage as a defender.
Yeah, definitely. And the game's definitely swung because you were allowed to jackal. Like 10 years ago, you were allowed, the contest was, and obviously the ruck laws were different then, but you were allowed, it was always a contest. And it was a fair contest, and you saw a lot more turnovers. I remember when Marty Holler first came to the Ospreys, he'd get like...
I was carnage.
He'd get 7-8 turnovers a game. It was incredible. Now, like those type of sevens are probably... Like, George still gets turnovers because he's a class act. But it's harder than ever before for people, not just sevens, but it's harder to get turnovers. So it means that people are going to try and tackle higher. You know, it's just the way... So there's stuff around the laws of the game and stuff. But I think like we don't coach tackling high. We want to get the guy to ground as quickly as possible. Whether that's a low tackle or a high tackle or a double tackle, then every situation is different.
But if you keep getting pinged off the park defensively at the breakdown, that approach might change. You might want to start keeping people up and hitting them higher.
Well, yeah, and they're the sort of conversations that every coaching team would have, wouldn't they, in the country? Like, so it's it's a different one. But I just think it's really interesting going back to the thing about where I get frustrated with, and I think it, let's not forget, like, it's 100% correct that they're trying to protect players. Like, and you know what annoys me is when people say, oh, the game's gone soft.
Yeah, you do it then.
Like, honestly, right, there's more collisions, there's more high-speed collisions than ever before. There's higher ball in play time
players
than ever before.
Players are bigger, faster,
if
stronger.
You watch a game pitch side, the collisions are brutal.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So when people say the game's gone soft, then it really
Even
frustrates
us
me.
That played a bit not and that long like, ago, it's yeah, brutal it's, now. It's,
I won't want to play it's, now.
No.
Honestly, it's such a brutal game. And so, and all the laws and the governing bodies
Still
are
do
trying
a job.
To do... All the governing bodies and all the different organisations are trying to do is protect players, which is 100% the right thing. Where I get frustrated is like 100% a red card is for someone that leads with a forearm, because that's a choice. Like if I carry the ball with my leading with my forearm, or if someone's on the floor, like the Bastro example, and you throw a forearm to someone's head on the floor, that's a red card. That's foul play. Where I think the grey areas are the high speed collisions, like the Will Spencer, the George Smiths, where I turned myself off there.
You're all right.
The high speed collisions, I don't believe warrant a red card because it's not intentional. I know that people say intent doesn't come into it, but George Smith is led with his arm, okay,
and shoulder, yeah,
and it's a high speed collision, and he's got red carded for it, but I don't think it's as clear cut to say force to the head red card. Now, I was having a chat with John Muldoon, our defence coach, about this, and he's obviously big into hurling, and hurling have, yeah. I know other people have mentioned this, hurling have a black card where any sort of foul play in those examples, black card means you leave the field, but then another player replaces you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't ruin the like, so
yeah,
so
it doesn't end the contest.
Yeah, like you imagine watching a World Cup final. Well, it happened with the Lions, didn't it, where Sonny Bill gets red card in the second test, Warburton in 2011.
Yes.
Like,
Cost you World Cup, didn't he?
I'm a fan. Like, when I watch rugby,
wasn't playing, don't care.
Imagine paying that money to go and watch a spectacle like that, and it gets an accidental high speed collision, means that it's the end of a contest. That can't happen.
That's what rugby league do. They put players on report.
So
as well.
Yeah, a report. Like, I really like that. I just think it's common sense. A black card means you leave the field, it gets reviewed, another player comes on, so it doesn't affect your team.
Yeah.
But then that player then it gets, and if after 10 minutes the TMO's looked at it and gone, it's actually not foul play, he can maybe come back on. Or if he goes right, well, that's on report, and then it goes to a panel or whatever, then
or if
that's
he says
common
actually
sense.
That should have been a red card. The person who's come on for 10 minutes goes off, and it has to go off.
Yeah,
it was foul play.
It's the uncertain areas or in certain tackles where you're getting a slight disadvantage, but you're not losing a player for the whole of the game. You can bring someone on who's not probably going to be as good as a starting
100%.
Player.
100%. And I think it's the same with, like, you know, the high balls, isn't it? Like, when people go for high balls, and it's all those type of accidental high-speed collisions should, in my opinion, if it's a contest and it's not intentional, and you lead him with decent, like George is led with, he's led with his arm, he's led, you know, there's nothing... It's not gone for a cheap shot, swinging arm, or led with a forearm when he's carrying. You know, so I think it's just those. They're the frustrating ones in the game at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, it is.
So last weekend, JT, you'd expect at any level if you score 40 points, you win the game. Score 40 points at home, you win the game. But that must be a hell of a game to lose that.
Just quickly, what do the boys call you? Like, in the, do they call you JT? Do they call you John? Or Jonathan?
Yeah, Gov, did make him call you Gov?
No, just JT.
John
JT,
the Baptist. Yeah. No, JT.
But that must have been a hell of a game to lose that. Is it kind of pleased to be part of a great spectacle?
No, we were gutted. As coaches and as players, we were gutted. It was actually Pat's 50th on Saturday night. And it was fancy dress.
Ruined it.
And we were like walking into it, even Pat himself, we were broken that we dropped the 3 points. Like, and... It was a great. If you were a neutral, it was a great game of rugby.
Yeah.
But I think we were just disappointed. Like, we conceded a couple of soft tries, and I think there's just been there's been lots of good stuff from us so far this season, and we've been in every game, and we've shown lots of good. We're just probably making a few too many errors. There's too much error in our game at times. And we just need to execute and be a bit more clinical in certain aspects.
Does Will Hurrell remind you of me?
Yeah, well, the strength. Definitely.
He's so
the strength.
Strong, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talk yourself up, yeah. Though,
anyway. What about
Does He-Man remind you of me, JT? What about Brad Pitt? No, Vin Diesel.
Alexis
anyway.
Sale. What about Luke Morihan?
He's class.
He's very
player,
good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, I look at him and you don't really... He doesn't look that powerful, that dynamic, but...
He is one.
Skill-wise, footwork, skill, reading the game, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he's class. Yeah, he's... And I think, like, probably an underrated part of the game is, like, high ball, isn't it? Like, the high ball contest is so important in the Premiership, and that's probably what cost, like, a couple of years ago. We used to lose every 50-50 in the air. Mm. But guys like Luke Alapate are really good under the high ball. Luke does everything well, like, runs well, tackles well, doesn't make many mistakes, and he's a really good pro, yeah. So we're lucky to have him.
I like Ewan at nine. He looked good. He looked lively.
Sorry?
Ewan at nine. Are we calling him Ewan? Am I saying it right?
No. He actually said, I didn't listen to the podcast last week, but he said that you'd called him Urine or something.
Urine. I think you did, actually.
His mates had said, yes, Andy Urine.
Oh, yeah, Andy Urine. Anyway, I mean, a really big thing for Premiership players now is that every week for Premiership Rugby, I do a 15, I do a flats 15. Oh, it's massive for the guys now. It's like getting a Lions cap, getting the call up for that. So, Urine. Is it Urine? Am I saying it right? Urine. Oh, God. Urine.
How big was the Northampton wing?
Hang on. He's in. And Urine's in. Okay. Urine's in. Okay.
Is he?
He's in.
Oh, he'll be over
there. How big was the Northampton wing?
Absolute machine.
Big T, they call him.
Absolute machine, yeah.
Mate.
Nai Rivaro.
Size of him.
Yeah.
He is very, very big, isn't he?
Yeah. And it's just, he's one of those, like, do you remember Lomu back in the day? If you went low,
bounce off
he'd just do the old chicken wing on you. Yeah. Or if you went high, he'd hand you off. It was a bit like that. Like, he's got that freakish ability, yeah.
Yeah, he could be quite a signing if they get a bit of room for him.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's a bonus point.
We got 2 points, which is crucial, isn't it? Yeah, it was good to get 2 points, but we would have loved the five.
Mm. Flats, you're at Saracens Bath.
Yeah.
Liam Williams had a hat-trick.
Yeah, but he's the Lineker of rugby. He's just tapping king, isn't he? He had to...
he actually had to work for, I think, his first try.
When he went round Rocco, he stepped Rocco.
He just checks him. It just makes me laugh seeing him run, isn't it? You know, he just... He's really incredibly fast, great on his feet, but you watch the style of his running, it doesn't go, does it? But it works.
But it works. He's very, very good, and he looks great for Saris.
Alex was good at the weekend.
Yeah, he was brilliant, and he's getting better.
I like Lazowski at centre as well at 13. I think that's his best position.
People are saying he's the answer for England at 13, whereas...
You love Henry Slade.
Yeah, I like them both, but Henry Slade's played so well, I'm not sure you can drop him. But Lazowski, I tell you what he does do... is absolutely batter people. He melts people in the tackle. Henry Slade, they don't get much tougher than... For pretty boys, he's one of the toughest pretty boys about Henry Slade. But Lazowski is, I probably, if you're that way inclined, if he's your type, quite pretty as well. He absolutely smashes people like Johnny Wilkinson used to. He's just melting people at the weekend in the second half.
But there's no real surprise there, was there? I mean, half-time is 26-20. Bath are still in the game, but... Like any team that goes to Saracens.
Yeah, you kind of wondered how. So Bath changed, I think, 48 of their team for this game. And, you know...
Not wrong with that, mate.
No, predictably. They got Exeter, Wasps, Toulouse the next 3 weeks. And it's on the plastic pitch, which can affect different players differently. And I just think, well, no one from Bath would ever admit this, but if you send your absolute flat-out first-choice team up there, there is a very strong chance they will still lose. And actually, they will get put through an incredibly hard game on a plastic pitch. So I sort of think, well, fans don't like it, which I completely understand, but it wasn't like you're putting kids out there. You got lads with 50 caps playing in that second-choice team. So equally, I still remain not quite sure how Bath scored 27 points, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But they did. Good on them.
Intercepts, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, they... Helped. And that one Tom Homer try was really nicely worked off turnover, but it's like almost like Sarri's switched off as much as Bath put something together. But Sarri's coughed up a couple of tries unusually. It should have been 50 points. It should have definitely been 64, perhaps even more if they were properly on it. But it was a proper pasting, but it wasn't totally unexpected, to be honest.
You were up in Newcastle, weren't you?
Yeah, Newcastle Friday night. Yeah, that was an interesting game.
How on earth did Watson score off that centre scrum?
Pardon?
How on earth did Watson score for Wasps?
Oh yeah, did you ever watch the games on TV, JT, or did you do an analysis like the week after?
No, like I normally watch rugby. I didn't actually watch that game. And if I've missed it, then I'll watch
Austin
it.
Austin Healy was going on about
funny.
Wasps were way too deep off the centre field scrum. There's no way they're going to score.
Well, that's because the 10 and the 15, so Sopawanger and Miller,
behind the scrum.
Were directly behind the number 8 in the scrum. And he's like, why do they do that? It never works. It never works. They scored. Sopawanger threw like a basketball pass over top to Watson and scored. It was great. I hammered him on telly. It was perfect. And he got it and he denied it. And everyone was sending him proof on Twitter that he'd said it. But interesting game. So Wasps didn't get away with it. They stayed in it. But there's a fine line, isn't it? It's like with you guys at Bristol playing and playing and playing. It's like, let's go. Actually, there is a balance to be struck there, because there are times you need to be pragmatic, and Newcastle really want to play. They really want to put teams to sword and be aggressive at home and make it a difficult place to go and play. So when they're getting chances to kick for goal, they're kicking for the corner to be aggressive. Yeah. And I remember when they were doing it, and I'm in comms and I'm thinking, don't be that boring old geezer. Don't be yesterday's geezer. Old man, but I'm like, you've got to take the points. And in the end, they lose by a point to Wasps because they didn't take... And you think, maybe they would have taken the penalties and Wasps would have scored 3 more tries. You don't know. But it's one of those things, you're playing against teams with strike runners like Wasps have got in the team. If there are points on offer, you know, something actually that Ian Madigan does very well for you guys, when they're on offer, take them.
He's got a lovely curl to his kick. He'd be amazing at corners,
wouldn't he? It was funny because he missed a couple in pre-season where he gets the old, there's the old swerve, and he comes back.
Like the draw, John Taylor for Wales.
And he missed a couple of pre-season, but and Bruce Rihanna, who's our kicking coach, was chatting with him. He's like, "Oh, don't worry, it'll by the start of the season, the draw will be back."
Oh, is it?
and lo and behold, like he kicks well for us. He does.
I can't believe John Eales used to kick. That's crazy. He still gets.
Did you ever kick, Shanks?
No, I had one kick once in a semi-final. Remember we had the kickoff?
Oh yeah, the Nugget.
Yeah. But obviously I nailed mine.
Just quickly going back to the size thing, right? We obviously played them a few weeks ago. It's frightening the depth they have and the athletes. So in their back five, right?
Matt.
So you got like Itoje, Cruz, then you got Skelton.
Yeah.
But then you got like Asikwa, right? And then you got Rhodes,
Ray,
Jackson,
and
Ray.
Then you got the physical. Yeah. Mate, honestly, and I think like the question you asked at the start, Flats, about like Bristol, the expectation on Bristol, like they've been together like 7, 8, 9 years, and they've developed like not only the combinations and the cohesion as a team, but they've got the depth. Like when you just go and they can rotate their squad and still put world class athletes, and it's frightening, really.
It's like you're keeping they manage to keep all their stars happy when there's more than sort of 15.
I don't think that, because that's easier when you've got the depth. Equally, there's a balance again there between backing people and giving people a run. So, like the All Blacks, you know, everyone's talked about England have struggled since, I guess, Tins and Greenwood retired to get a proper midfield. It's like, yeah, I get that. But actually, when New Zealand won the World Cups, they had four centres who regularly played games. They had Conrad Smith, Mar Nonu, they had Sonny Bill, and they had Malachi Fekitoa.
Crotty.
So these guys are all regular All Blacks in two slots. So you just, at some point, they have removed Nonu or a Conrad Smith, who've got 100 caps each, who are the kings.
Yeah.
They've removed them and put in rookies and said, we back you. There's something in that.
Just on the Wasps-Newcastle game, mate. When the game finished, you're in the bar and you sat next to Dai Young, mate. He properly alphaed you. He made you look like a newborn baby.
Like,
you're not a small bloke.
Okay, so I don't know if you noticed, JT. I've lost a bit of weight.
Yeah, you're looking good. You're looking good, mate.
He made you look like a 12-year-old boy.
And I love that. So, tell you what happened. Couple of things. I got a new coat, and I thought, I went to the shop and I said, have you got that in a double XL? No. When I bought in the shop, have you got that in a double XL? And they said, no, we've only got an XL. I said, that won't fit. And they said, well, try it, because sometimes they come up big. I put it on and it fit perfectly. I haven't fit into an XL coat for a long time, right? Now, I've lost 20 kilos, okay?
It's like Cinderella, this is.
Right? So, I'm 120 kilos now. And I sat next to Dai Young, and if I put my 20 kilos back on, I would still be 20 kilos lighter than Dai. Boys reckon, that's what Andy Hazel always says, boys at WASP reckon he's between 155 and 160. And the thing is, mate, he walks, he comes in and you say hello and you like brush against the side of him, the front of him, the back of him. And of course, he will have more fat on him than Shanks will. Of course, he always will. It's like knocking on the side of a car.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you could knock on it and it'd make a noise. It's not bold. It's not falling around fat. He is just enormous.
He is all bench, isn't he?
He is enormous, man. Like, his back's about 3 feet across.
What are you wearing at the moment? You're looking a bit trim. I mean, we're playing this charity football match and you were quite big then.
That was during my dark time that I spoke about. Yeah, mate, like, so when I...
We're playing a cancer charity football match and I hadn't seen you for a while. And...
I was always always quite skinny.
No, you're really athletic.
Yeah.
No, you were.
Yeah. But not that day. I never went between, my whole playing career was between like 107 and 111 kilos. Like never. And then within 6 months of retiring, I was about 125.
Yeah.
Seriously. Gorged himself on Toblerone and
I was like, I think like, because you obviously make sacrifices, don't you? And I was always pretty good with my diet and this and
you
that.
You rip in when you retire, some people don't.
And then I just had that. It was like, you know when you have an off-season two-week binge?
Yeah.
My two-week binge lasted for 6 months. Yeah. And then it was at the point where I had to get all new jeans, new clothes, everything. I was like, right, I've got to do something about it. But I'm back at about 116-ish.
You were always fit, because I always remember in the gym, you always used to do cleans with your shoes off, facing the other way so you didn't look in the mirror.
Getting serious.
Proper gnaws in
the gym. Serious.
Him and Alwyn Jones wouldn't look in the mirror when they're doing power
test
cleans.
Test match every day,
shoes
is it?
Off, doing your socks, mate. It's
test
better.
Match every day, is it?
Just trying to be the best. We can't be shanks. What's wrong with that, mate?
How tall are you, JT?
6'5".
Right, so I'm 6 foot and I went up to 140, mate.
Did you?
Yeah. 138 and then 140.
After finishing?
Yeah, yeah. So about a year ago, I was, last New Year, I was 140.
Sugar.
Yeah, really bad.
What have you done to... is it training or diet?
Stress.
Working with
Shanks. Yeah, it's a bit of both, really. It had to come off. I've had one Mackie D's in 2018, a few weeks ago, and I won't have another one in 2018.
Yeah.
You come home from state at night.
I can't say that, mate.
I can. I will not have another one.
That's what I find really hard about coaching, is like, it's so easy to eat bad food.
Yeah.
Because like, you're working long hours, and like, I've lost the services. Sometimes I'm coming back at 8 o'clock at night, and I'll be like, oh, I haven't had food.
Bring your missus.
I'll just get a sausage roll and a coffee or something like that. You know? You just, it's so much easier. But that's what I've got, you know, the last 12 months, I've got much better at not eating crap.
Yeah, that's the key. Don't eat.
Yeah.
Don't eat until you're so full you're going to be sick 8 times a day or 3 times a day, which is what I'm doing. And also,
you've got to prepare as well.
Don't eat too much crap. But the thing is, I'll go in there and I'll get a coffee and a big sausage roll, and then I'll drive home from here and have dinner.
But
a year ago, I would have got 2 sausage rolls and a jumbo pack of crisps, a bottle of water, and, you know, I'd have had some healthy stuff too. Then I'd have got home and had dinner and had another plate of dinner, and it was like the amount of food I was eating in a day was crazy.
No wonder you couldn't poo.
that's always been regular. I feel a lot freer. Freer of bowel now.
Yeah.
But
cheers.
The other thing is, though, we're still on it, Shanks. Okay. We got this little... place down in Devon, right, go to in the summer, it's really convenient. Just leave all your shorts and t-shirts and that there and don't have to take anything down, right? I went down this summer and I put a pair of shorts on to go to the beach, and even with the laces fully pulled, they wouldn't stay up. So I've actually gone from a 44 waist to a 38, so I can literally walk into shops. I still have problems with legs and stuff, but I walk into shops and buy trousers. Hasn't happened for
38
years.
38 waist, 24 leg.
Hey, we did one, right? We did one where I remember we're doing getting fitted up for suits with England. Obviously, I didn't get picked, so I never needed my suit. But Darren Garforth, the Tigers prop, and there wasn't an ounce on him, mind. He was like Di. I mean, not as big as Di, but he's a big unit, hard, solid unit. And I remember his trousers were 44-29. I mean, that is some shape, isn't it? Yeah, it wasn't fat, though. Like it's, a house brick, man. Like,
mate, a funny story with Ian Evans. Like, I know you had him on the show, didn't you, before?
Yeah.
Like, he always struggled with... he's, like, 6'8", right?
Yeah, he's huge.
And I would always, like... if ever I was, like, with the missus going for a coffee or Cardiff or something, I'd see him coming out of High and Mighty. And he was really sheepish about it. He'd, like... I was
wanted
like,
to be cool,
just embrace that you're tall and you've got to go to High and Mighty.
Yeah.
And he'd be like... oh, no, I wasn't in it, but I went. No, there was somebody else. It wasn't me.
But, and he's got t-shirts. Mate, like, old guys rule.
I'll take something back for my dad.
I always remember we played back my in mum. The day, we played Leinster. And that was back in the day where you'd have like a few beers after the game.
Yeah.
And we went out to this sort of nightclub in Dublin. And it was just after Devon Tone had just come on the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were in this club, and obviously a few of the Leinster boys come in. And I'm with Ian at the bar, right? And we're sort of leaning against the bar, and he's just like, he's staring through me, right? And then after a while, I was like, Yazza, what's going on? And he's going, look at him. And Devon Tone is obviously taller than the Anto.
Yeah.
So next thing, he walks over to Devon Tone, he goes, excuse me, but where do you buy your jeans? And he was genuine as well. I was like, I can't believe you just asked Devon Tone where he buys his jeans.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I was in a shop, I won't say the brand, but I was in Levi's shop in London about a year ago, and I was trying to get some jeans, obviously, and this bloke walks in, and he was, like, to say he was big, I've not seen many people like it. He was probably only 6'7", which is, we've all got mates that are that tall or taller. He was huge, and he was like big sort of bodybuilder type bloke, and he's buying a pair of jeans, and I said, mate, where do you get your trousers from? He goes, I have to get them all made. He said, even my jeans get made. And he was coming in and picked up 2 pairs of Levi's jeans.
Yeah.
And it's £1,000.
Wow.
2 pairs of Levi's jeans. They paid £500 a pair for 2 pairs.
You sure they're not 501?
You mother. Ooh.
Sort of like a bugbear of mine, right? Like, I'm not massive. Like, I've only got size 12.
Yeah, but compared to normal people, you
are. Yeah, but like feet-wise, I'm size 12, right? Which I don't think is particularly huge these days.
You'd always wear and black Mizuno boots, but put white laces in them.
Oh, no, that guy.
Always. Him and Alan Wynne-Jones.
I did it first.
Yeah.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
I can't believe you can't buy size 12 shoes off the shelf these
can't
days.
Can't you?
Like, you still struggle in, like, you, in some shops you can, but it still, it goes like 7 to 11 for adults. I'm like, it's crazy. Why, size 12 is not massive.
No, like, but 14 or 16 is massive.
But I'm 11, and I think that's the perfect size.
Well, you'll be all right then. Yeah,
thank you. I'm absolutely fine. What are you, Shanks?
11 as well.
Yeah, it feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, but, I mean, you just being under 6 foot with a size 11 feet.
I'm just over 6 foot.
Abnormal. Should have been a swimmer.
I'm just over 6 foot.
Feet like that.
I get told a lot I've got really small feet. Everyone's like, oh, look at your little feet. And they look really little, don't they?
They're really wide.
It's because I've got these calves on top of them. They're size 11.
Oh, mate, Johnny Afoa has got massive calves. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah.
He's a good man, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very good
guy. Would you rather have big calves or big arms?
I'm all right, I've got both. All right,
muscular calves or muscular arms?
All right, arms.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Right, some other results. Do you want to quickly breeze through?
If you want, I mean, if you want, we don't have to because everyone already knows
Gloucester.
The results.
Did you watch that game?
Yeah, watch them all. But funny game that intercept for Nathan Earl.
He looked fast, didn't he?
On the game, well, he's very fast. It's unless. Harlequins haven't shown much brilliant form since round one against Sale.
It's a big win, though, to go up to Gloucester.
That's a
Gloucester
big win.
Well. Gloucester lost two on the bounce now, lost to Sarries last week.
Punchy for Gloucester, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything? Were you surprised by that?
Yeah. Like, you are surprised by it, but then, again, it just goes back to the league, isn't it? It's like, Sarries and Exeter are out there at the top at the moment, but then below that, everyone can beat anyone on their day.
Which to go and win at Welford Road.
Exactly. Queens win at Gloucester. Yeah, and like, I think if you're 5% off it emotionally or physically... doesn't matter who you are, you can get beat, can't you?
Yeah.
Munster absolutely destroyed Ulster at the weekend, 64-7.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's a question for you now. If did Ulster have anyone playing? Did they have their first team playing or the rest of the load of guys?
Right.
It's one of those, you know.
Well, not really. I mean, Cooney played, Burns played, Darren Cave, Gilroy.
Played, didn't
yeah. So it's pretty. It was a fairly strong team. But Scarlets hammered Southern Kings. John Davies is back.
With a bang.
Yeah.
It said in the paper.
Ah, he looked good. He looked really good.
He's the man, isn't he?
Yeah, he set up a couple of tries, scored two. Good looking bloke, just...
Quadzilla.
Got it all.
Just don't wear a head guard.
Yeah.
So people see you, so you can, you know...
So work the brand a bit.
That's probably why you didn't make it in the media, John, because always had a head guard on, like Michael Owen.
Is that the only reason Michael Owen didn't make it in the media? Did he not want to make it in the media?
He loved wearing a head guard, didn't he? Even after the match, he'd still have it on for interviews.
It's that 2005 Grand Slam photo where all the aftermatch photos, like the team thing and all, he's still got it on for like an hour after the game. And he reckons he just forgot to take it off.
Just in case. I like that.
I think that's probably... we probably won't have jokes this week because it's been a long pod. We get listeners to voice WhatsApp jokes to us or stories.
Yeah. Been a couple of good ones actually, and a couple of terror ones.
Yeah, I mean, we'll
keep sending them in. We'll do them next week.
Yeah, we'll do them all next week. Yeah, and we've only got a 3-hour limit here in the car park. Otherwise, I get.
Have you got a joke, Shanks? How often would I speak to you, Shanks? Like once every couple of months.
Yeah,
And he answers the phone with a joke. He doesn't like, oh hi, how's it going? How's the family and all this? He's like tells me his latest joke.
Earlier on, when I'm on the way up here, he called me in my car. And I was like, how are you doing? He's like, hanging out last night.
Oh,
hanging.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, he's lying. He's building up to a story about going out last night. It's going to lie and end up being a joke. But he actually went out. It was an anti-climax.
It was Ryder Cup, wasn't it? Do you watch Ryder Cup? Oh,
no,
I loved it.
No,
I had a Ryder Cup afternoon and a place called Home House in Penarth. They had a roast dinner a lot. Just the lads. All the lads.
With a capital lad.
Yeah. And
probably had some pints, didn't you?
Yeah.
Stare at some girls. Did you stare at some girls?
They got on the Rioja. No girls, mate.
And the Rioja.
Lads. but yeah, so I'm a little bit jaded today.
But that's, you know,
that's part of my life, isn't it?
That's who you are, and it's the lifestyle
you lead.
Work
hard, play hard. Work too bloody hard sometimes.
You usually put a bit of tan on, don't you, when you're feeling a bit
peaky?
Yeah,
yeah. No, I was on TV on Friday, so I had a bit of tan on there, and I was with Nugget as well, so I had to make sure I looked browner than him. But he's got a red face now because he drinks a lot of wine.
Oh really, is he? Oh, that's good news for you though, standing next to him.
Exactly.
Normally you stand next to Alfie and he looks better. Stand next to Nug.
He's got better teeth. JT, John Thomas.
It's Jonathan, it is.
Jonathan.
Jonathan Thomas, yeah.
Really appreciate you coming down here and being on the podcast. We hope you, the listener, have enjoyed it in your car, at home, on the toilet, wherever you listen to it. Please subscribe to Flats and Shanks. We've not said that for a while, have we?
We haven't said it all season.
Leave some feedback.
We're the least commercial podcast owners in the world. We don't actually quite know how to do that bit.
but do it. Tell your friends about it.
Leave some 5-star reviews and get your mum to leave one, and we'll send her £200. Is that what you do?
Exactly.
Yeah, be fine. Good luck, everyone. Cheers, JT.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.